We all have grizzly bears on our mind with it being springtime. And one thing I want to mention at the very beginning, because it's a great honor, Carol Barbie is in the audience, and her husband is the late Yellowstone Superintendent Bob Barbie. His memorial was 2 weeks ago, and he was very gentle with the young greenhorn reporter when he came west after working in the park, and had a great way of offering missives and dismissing things when you ran astray. And he once said to me, he called me up at 8 o'clock at night, and he said, "What are you doing? Are you auditioning to be the next Alston Chase?" That's a joke, because Chase wrote a book called Playing God in Yellowstone and was really the bane of Yellowstone. And Bob gently sent me these notes of critiquing Chase's book, and it ended up being a shot across the bow that I knew I never wanted to goof up and get on his bad side. So, we're here to talk about Grizzly Bear 399, and now that we have audio, what I'd like to do is just show you a brief trailer for the book, if you're interested in that.
Grizzlies of Pilgrim Creek is a critically acclaimed tale of the most famous mother bear on Earth, known as 399. And today has millions of human fans around the globe. They travel thousands of miles just for the hope of catching sight of her, or one of her cubs. 399 is nearly 20 years old, and she is still with us. But the question we must wrestle with is, for how long? Every day, she faces new perils. Is her survival doomed? Are we willing to do something about it? Not only for her and for us, but for our kids and grandkids and generations of both people and bears yet unborn. Does having a wild planet matter? Jane Goodall calls Grizzlies of Pilgrim Creek an important book for our time. It's an unprecedented portrait of 399 and her family, featuring 150 astounding images by internationally renowned wildlife photographer Thomas Mangelson, and a hair-raising narrative from noted environmental writer Todd Wilkinson. Grizzlies of Pilgrim Creek will put you on the edge of your seat. It's a harrowing story about life and death of both grizzlies and people in Greater Yellowstone, the most iconic ecosystem in America's wild backyard. It's also incredibly timely, for it has implications for the future of beloved creatures everywhere. Soon, the U.S. government will announce its intention to remove the Yellowstone ecosystem's legendary grizzlies from long-standing protection under the Endangered Species Act. There is huge scientific disagreement about whether this is wise. For some wildlife lovers, there is something else even more troubling. Plans are being advanced in Wyoming to recommence a controversial trophy sport hunt of grizzlies, putting 399 and hundreds of others at risk to become rugs or mounted heads on the wall. Grizzlies of Pilgrim Creek asks you, the reader, to decide, is this how we should be treating imperiled animals in the 21st century, when there are so many threats jeopardizing their future?
This is 399 over here, and this is 399 here. Imagine that I am 6'8 instead of On her hind legs, she stands about 7 feet tall. Tom Mangelson, unfortunately, can't be here, but this is his most iconic image. It was shot 30 years ago at Brooks Falls in Alaska. And Tom is known for being a photographer that searches for the perfect moment. And so I've known Tom for a long time, and about 11 years ago, we started tracking this bear that started showing up. The real question is, where are we going with grizzly bear recovery in Greater Yellowstone? When you think about it, think about being in Bozeman. I want to ask a question. How many of you in the audience tonight have been fatally mauled by a grizzly bear? How many of you have seen a grizzly bear? How many of you have seen a grizzly bear outside the national parks? I want to show you some slides of a mama and a cub. We'll visit it now, and then we'll come back to it. And really, this kind of serves as a metaphor for grizzly bear recovery. Here's mama and cub, newborn cub, cub of the year, swimming the Snake River at high water about a year ago. So eventually, the cub comes up to the back of the mama and grabs on to her back fur and brings her over, ferries her to the other side. And so in many ways, I want you to think tonight about grizzly recovery and this treacherous path that we've been through for this species. So you look at the lower 48. This is traditional grizzly range. And today, we have grizzlies in really two island populations, our region, the Greater Yellowstone, and then the Northern Continental Divide. And one of the major pushes is to push for connectivity, because we know that island populations of species wink out, go extinct at a higher rate than species that are connected to metapopulations. And so that's one of the main focuses in our region, is how to make that connection happen. And so here we are in Yellowstone National Park. One thing that's interesting to note is in the early 1970s, there were 136 grizzly bears left. And at that time, when there were 136 grizzlies, the year before grizzly bears were listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act in 1975, in the state of Wyoming and the state of Montana, they issued enough bear tags that exceeded the number of bears known to exist. So if everyone had gotten their bear tag, we would have essentially wiped out the species, except for this cluster of bears that lived in Yellowstone National Park and had been garbage feeding bears there. And as you know, the Craighead family recommended or warned about rapid closure of the dumps. The park biologists pushed for it because they knew that trash-eating bears were getting in trouble, and so they closed the dumps, and a lot of bears died. So in the decades since, this sort of shows the bulge of the bear population as it's pushed out. And indeed, we've got grizzly bears just south of Bozeman in the highlights. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up in the Bridgers soon, if they're not there yet. Crazy Mountains, we know that they're westward over into the Centennial. Sometime they may end up in the Tobacco Route Mountains. That's all part of the important corridor to connect them going to the north when you think about that. So in 1986, on a fall evening, Tom Mangelson woke up. His dog was barking at his sliding glass door. Tom didn't know what was going on, and he looked out there, and staring back were these two eyes. And the eyes looked at the dog that was barking at it, undeterred. And eventually, when Tom went to the window, the bear hightailed and ran away, and Tom said, "Oh my God, that wasn't a black bear, that was a grizzly bear." Grizzlies had been extirpated from Jackson Hole for about 50 years, and at that point, there wasn't a lot of hope that grizzlies would ever recolonize Jackson Hole. There was still cattle ranching going on in the park up through until 15 years ago. Grandfathered in when the park's current boundaries were expanded in 1950. And then in 1987, Mengelson was out and he saw this bear. This was Grizzly Bear 399, given her name by bear researchers with the Interagency Grizzly Bear Study Team. So she was given this numeric identity. And we can talk later about whether it's a good idea to give animals identities or nicknames or not, and I'd love to hear what your opinions are. So Mengelson saw 399 and he thought, huh, normally he had to go to Yellowstone to see bears or he would go to Alaska, and suddenly grizzlies were there and they were coming down from the north. And what was interesting is in 1987, 399 came out of her den with triplets, her first set of triplets, and she set up shop along the roadside. 399 had actually had a single cub a few years earlier, but biologists believe that that cub was killed by a large boar grizzly. And so 399 moved out of the backcountry to the front country where she was, where people were. Not only did she find that safer to raise her cubs, but there was a lot of natural food there, and we'll talk about that in a bit. So you have this very charismatic mama bear with three cubs, and she's navigating the front country where she's very accessible, and she becomes this celebrity. So I want to take you to that year, 1987, and I want to share a little bear story. So imagine that you're a school teacher and you're attending an education conference at Jackson Lake Lodge. How many of you know where Jackson Lake Lodge is? Spectacular hotel that overlooks Jackson Lake, the Tetons, arguably one of the most beautiful overlooks in the country, if not the world. And so you have this school teacher, Dennis Vandenbos, who's there, and he likes to get exercise. And he goes out to a place, I guess analogous to the maze in Alaska where Timothy Treadwell disappeared with those Alaskan brown bears, but it's a place called Willow Flats. And it's a jungle of willow bushes, and we'll see it in a minute. And he goes out there, and on the Monday of the week of the conference, he finds signs, and it says, this trail closed due to bear activity. And he goes to the conference, and Friday comes around, and he notices that the bear signs aren't up anymore. So he's on his way walking out to Willow Flats from Jackson Lake Lodge, and he passes an elk cow and a calf. It's kind of skittish. And he walks a little further, and he finds a moose cow and two calves, and they're skittish. He can't figure out why they're not fleeing at his approach. And he gets out to Willow Flats, and there are no signs there, and the hair on the back of his neck stands up. He says, you know what, I don't think I want to go into this maze. And so he turns around and he comes back and he sees the mama cow elk. And something doesn't feel right. And he takes another step and the next thing he knows, there is this large brown mass literally bearing down on him from out of the brush. And he turns to look, and he thinks to himself, this is just like a Discovery Channel documentary, and I know you're not supposed to look into the eyes of a grizzly bear, but he said, I couldn't help it. And so the grizzly bear was charging at him, and Vandenbos was looking, and he didn't know what to do, and the bear turned at the last minute and started skidding, and he said it felt as if it were in slow motion. And Vandenbos turned, and 399 looked, and they locked eyes, and he thought, this is so cool, this thing of profound beauty. And she skids by, and he turns, and then he steps back, and he falls. This triggers a response in 399, and within a second, she's on top of him. And at this point, Vandenbos sees three other blurs coming out. And so he's down on the ground, and he feels this weight on top of him. And then he feels this sharp pain in one of his butt cheeks. And he thinks, this isn't good. A little time elapses. He feels a couple other lighter weights on top of him. And then he feels a much harsher bite on his butt cheek. And as he said, this one is bite and tear. And Vandenbos thought to himself, this is how I'm going to die. And yet he was fascinated by what was happening at that point. So meantime, a young woman wrangler, a concession employee, and her friend were driving in the parking lot, and they saw this mass of a mama grizzly bear and three cubs, and they thought, wow, that's cool. She's on top of something. And they've realized that she's on top of a man, and she screams, and 399 sees that and starts to take off. And so 399 is fleeing. The authorities come. They help Vandenbos. They're now bringing him into town to get medical treatment. And the rangers have been called. So there are rangers that are coming to the scene. And Vandenbos has the wherewithal to say, I want you to call back to the park and tell them, I don't want anything to happen to the bear. It wasn't the bear's fault. So the rangers are coming, and now 399 has gone back into the bushes to retrieve the elk calf that she had killed as Vandenbos had walked out to Willow Flats and returned. That's what prompted the attack. He got too close to a grizzly sow with her cubs feeding on an elk. However, some other eyewitnesses now looked out, and as they saw them feeding on this animal, they thought that it was Vandenbos upon which 399 was eating. And so the rangers were rushing, now thinking for a moment that she was eating this person alive. And word came, and they figured it out, and at the last minute she was saved. But you wouldn't fault rangers to open up and kill the bears if that's what they thought. So you think about how moments turn on decision making. In many ways, the recovery of Yellowstone grizzly bears kind of twists and turns on moments and thinking. And afterward, the superintendent of Grand Teton consulted with Chris Servine, who for a long time oversaw grizzly bear management, and the superintendent of Grand Teton said that was a natural incident. We're going to allow 399 and her cubs to live. As the head of the grizzly bear study team then, his name was Chuck Schwartz, told me when I interviewed him afterwards, he said, if 399 had wanted to eat Mr. Vandenbos, she could have eaten. Instead, she was teaching the cubs a lesson, a non-lethal lesson in how to deal with human beings. So, had 399 died that day, you think about this, 136 grizzly bears in the 1970s, that's all that was left in Greater Yellowstone. This bear today is responsible, if you count her, for 18 animals. So that's almost about one-sixth of the known population. One bear of the known population in 75. So this, we'll get to this to talk about how important individuals are and why they matter. So 399 survives, and her cubs set up around the front country, and she becomes this international sensation. Mangelson is there every day taking photographs of her, documenting her. He and I have tracked these bears over a decade. And again, because of their close proximity, people start showing up in droves, and because of social media, people around the world are aware, and they start diverting their vacation plans to come and see her. Here's another question. Are, quote, celebrity bears a good thing or a bad thing? Just as, is it a good thing or a bad thing that we name bears, or, quote, celebrity bears good or bad? You hear from some people in the federal agencies who say that she's habituated. Is she habituated, or is she tolerant of people? Think about that. This is what it looks like out there. There's a special entity in Grand Teton National Park called the Bear Brigade, and they try to keep people at a distance, but it is a strange, chaotic, and frightening scene out there where you have 399 walking between cubs. You have busloads of visitors, sometimes people who aren't accustomed to U.S. wildlife management. And when they've had encounters with wildlife in the past, it's largely been in urban settings with bears. And one of the things they've been taught to do is when you interact with bears, you give them food and they'll do a trick for you. So you have this grizzly bear mama navigating the front country. People are misbehaving. They're rushing at her. They're surrounding her. They're throwing food to her. And yet here you have a bear. Dr. Susan Clark, a Yale professor, she heads the Northern Rockies Conservation Cooperative. As she says, you've got 399 who's making hundreds of decisions in small amounts of time, and yet she keeps it together. So again, are these the kinds of bears that we want, particularly as Greater Yellowstone fills up? So this is 399's backyard. This is her with that first set of triplets. They're now going into their last winter together. When they come out the next spring, she'll boot them out. How do we know, how did the title for the book become Grizzlies of Pilgrim Creek? This is near the den site of 399. It was a photograph that was taken from the air. This is when she came out with her second set of cubs. This is her home range. Grizzly bears have home ranges covering hundreds of square miles. If you've been to Jackson, you know that's a lot of terrain. You have Teton Wilderness up here, and you have Pilgrim Creek up here. Really wild country, and she's down here along the highway where cars are speeding by. Not at 45, but 65 miles an hour. And so it's a perilous thing to be a grizzly bear. And so one of the things that Mengelson discovered as he started to follow her around and try to respect her space is really realizing and respecting her as a mother, this sentient creature. People, you know, they like to dismiss bears. Here's another question for you. Would we care as much about grizzly bears if they were nameless, faceless beings and all we had to do was think about them with an existence value? Would we care about them as much? I would argue we would not care about them as much. And so one of the favorite things that Tom likes to do is go and photograph elk as they migrate through Grand Teton National Park in the fall and ultimately end up at the National Elk Refuge. Here they are along the Snake River. And sometimes when you're out there, magical things happen and you stumble into other things. Here's 399. She took down an elk as it was crossing the Snake River. This isn't that far, actually, from the famous Snake River Overlook where Ansel Adams took that iconic image. This is 399 after she's had a feast going into her yoga pose. And sometimes you're rewarded when you're just out being there in the right place at the right time. This is called First Light Grizzly. So as many of you know, what grizzly bears will do is they will cache their animal to keep it cool, to keep it away from other predators, including annoying magpies. And so over the course of her life, 399's given birth to three different sets of triplets. It's a remarkable thing that speaks to the quality of the food sources around there. And of course, she's teaching these animals in these matriarchal societies. Boars are the bad boys out there. They don't do much with the youngster rearing. And so she's teaching her cubs how to navigate. They're watching her, everything that she does. And indeed, 399's acumen with how she navigates the front country was likely learned from her own mother, this anonymous individual whom we don't know. So, grizzly bears are one of the slowest to breed animals, second only to muskox. And so, that's part of the problem in Greater Yellowstone. Wolves are incredibly fertile. You can kill up to 30% of a wolf population and it will bounce back. With grizzly bears, 85% of bears die due to human run-ins. Few make it to old age and die of old age. And so one afternoon, 399 came out with her second set of cubs, and her daughter, 610, remember the original triplets, there were three of them, 570, 610, and 615, two sisters, 615 and 610. 610 came out with two cubs. And during that summertime, they ended up swapping a cub. 399 gave up one of her cubs and 610 adopted it and raised her two. They added a sibling. And so 610 ended up taking it over. But during that time, out along the highway, this was before 399 gave up one of her cubs, there was all this commotion along the highway, and she was out foraging, and she got separated from her cubs. And so the cubs were running manically trying to find mama, and mama was running manically trying to find them, and they disappeared. And a long time went by, and so you had all these bear watchers on the phone trying to figure out where each of them were. And so this went on, and rangers came, and nobody knew what was going to happen. And then finally, the cubs were able to find 399, and she immediately went onto her back and started nursing them. And so you think, for you moms out there, distressed kids, you nurse your kids and calm them down. This is one of the things about the sentience of grizzly bears. We think of them as these menacing creatures, but are they really the menace? So we know that adult grizzlies can't climb trees because of their claws, but youngsters will give it a go. I think Tom calls this photograph Spider Bear. So, Jackson Lake Lodge, Tetons are over here. Here's 399 and her cubs. This is that dense jungle of Willow Flats where Vandenbos came down to. He would have entered there. So for a long time during the first iterations of 399 and her cubs, every afternoon you would have people that would walk out onto the veranda. There are a lot of people, a couple hundred people up there right now. And they would sip their cocktails and they would watch Predator and Prey play out, as Mengelson says, a matinee. And so 399 would come in, and what's interesting is all of the elk mamas and their cows would stand down the bears. And the reason was they were able to keep track of them. You have antelope that will do the same thing in Africa with lions. You don't want to lose sight of the predators. But 399 had a great strategy, and of course she's teaching her cubs the same thing. And so what she would do is she would just sort of meander around them and walk around, And eventually what the cow elk would do is they would start having their calves lay down and try and be silent. And 399 would go through and start picking off the calves. We have a bumper sticker on our car that's titled, "Lake Trout, Kill Elk." Remind me to get to the punchline for that later on. So all this predator and prey stuff that's going on, playing out right in front of people, you have this mama bear wandering in amongst people, supposedly this menacing predator, and yet all this stuff, natural stuff, is playing out. She's getting by, making her living naturally. But again, it's not easy being a grizzly bear. Tom once followed the tracks of 399 and her cubs 30 miles through snow that they had to post hole all the way up into Pilgrim Creek. And what they do is they come in and they feed upon elk carcasses from hunters in Grand Teton Park, and I'll get to that in a minute. But again, it's tough being a predator. It's tough finding enough meat, particularly in the autumn time before hyperphagia, when they need to put on pounds. A couple things that we know. We know that bears that go into hibernation with more fat and having ingested more protein as well produce higher litter sizes. And so the food intake in the fall is really important. But in Grand Teton National Park, in addition to livestock grazing, which was grandfathered in 1950 when the park was created, they also grandfathered in a trophy sport hunt of elk there. And so it's the only national park in the lower 48 that has a big game hunt there. And so here you have a national park that during the summertime you would be fined as a visitor if you approach too close to a grizzly bear. Now you have armed hunters going into the park and they're stalking elk. And they're coming in contact with grizzly bears and they're wounding some elk, and the grizzly bears are going in and feeding on carcasses. And in sometimes the bears are coming in on the elk that are being brought out. In fact, sometimes what we can't see here is that there was a blood trail that went through the snow and there were bear tracks that followed up. So the question is it a good idea to still have that grandfathered hunt in Grand Teton National Park? This is what the firing line looks like right on the park boundary. This is the town of Kelly, Wyoming, which is in the park. And the elk come out of the Teton Wilderness and they scramble and sprint across Grand Teton National Park toward the National Elk Refuge. And so hunters line up here, and it becomes in some years a bloodbath where they'll just start lobbying. I'm not anti-hunting. I'm not saying this is to be anti-hunting. I'm questioning this hunt. And there are lots of elk that are found every year from people who just lob bullets into elk herds as they bound through the park. A couple years ago, there were some hunters in there. I could tell you a bunch of different stories about conflicts between hunters inside Grand Teton National Park and grizzly bears. In one encounter, 399 was feeding, and a group of hunters were coming in. They didn't see her. And she took off running westward toward the snake right through a group of where there were 15 other hunters. And luckily, they didn't see her. But imagine being a hunter, seeing this mama bear with three cubs coming at you. But this boar grizzly was shot and killed in self-defense in Grand Teton National Park when he came upon an elk carcass on Thanksgiving Day. Here's the park boundary right up here. You can see the power line there. You've got the Bridger-Teton National Forest in back. This is a group of bison there. And you've got 399 and 610, and there are five cubs between them, so seven bears feeding on a bison that was wounded by a hunter, and it went down there and died. So what does all this mean? What does this mean for us in Montana? Anybody know who this is? So, if you talk to Dan Wink, the Yellowstone superintendent, he gets it. He sees profound value in transboundary grizzly bears, just as there was profound value for Cecil the lion in Zimbabwe. And Cecil, as we all know, was baited outside the park and shot by a Minnesota bow hunter. It caused international controversy. So the question is, what does delisting mean? What will it mean for grizzly bears? So here's Yellowstone, here's Grand Teton National Park, here's where 399 lives. What Wyoming has proposed is, they proposed to have bear hunting. There's a big debate of whether they're going to allow bear hunting up along the border here. Dan Wink has also talked about Yellowstone bears with Montana. Why would you have open season on bears that become tolerant of people and don't associate them with peril? Why then would you have a hunt on the northern part of the park? And let's look at what could happen there if this were Yellowstone National Park and this is Montana, where we have elk hunters hunting elk on both sides of the Yellowstone, leaving behind gut piles. What's going to happen to grizzly bears? Moreover, some of you I know have been up Tom Minor Basin watching grizzly bears feast upon moths in the fall, where you have a dozen bears there. Will hunting be prohibited there, or will hunters be allowed to just set up north of the park outside of those moth sites? So a lot of unanswered questions. So, grizzly bears, according to a study, eat more than 200 different things. They're opportunistic omnivores. They eat meat, and they eat plants, and they eat other things. By the way, they're out here. Any idea what they're out eating there? Beaver. So, among all of the foods, there are four main foods that have really driven, according to the scientists, fertility in grizzlies, which has driven reproduction and population growth. So you have meat, bison and elk, ground squirrels. You have army cutworm moths. You have Yellowstone cutthroat trout. You have even things like ants, and you have berries, and you have whitebark pine nuts. So they eat lots of different things. But think about your own diet. Think about what would happen if all you ate were salads. What would happen? The beauty of whitebark pine seeds is that they're high in fat. They have some protein. Yellowstone cutthroat trout, you all know the story of Yellowstone Lake. Somebody illegally dumped in lake trout. Yellowstone cutthroats would spawn in over 100 different streams coming out of Yellowstone Lake, and bears would set up there. Estimate of several dozen bears would set up around the lake. And now with Yellowstone cutthroat trout being wiped out by lake trout, they don't show up there anymore. Huge source of nutrition. Whitebark pine, huge source. Army cutworm moths, only 25 years ago discovered as a key food source. We've all seen this in our landscape. Our forests are dying due to mountain beetle outbreaks. Whitebark pine is also beset with blister rust. In the case of mountain pine beetles, we have reproduction cycles that are, two of them are occurring in a single summer, when sometimes we would only get one reproductive cycle in a summer. But because of warmer winters, they're not being killed. The beetles aren't being killed in the winter. Average temperatures are way up. And then you have climate change and drying forests on top of that, and these forests aren't being replaced. It's a mountain pine beetle. Army cutworm moths. So you have whitebark forests Bears go in there, they cache the seeds inside cones and eat the seeds prior to denning during hyperphagia, a very important food source. You have trout that sustain mama bears and cubs during the springtime. Early summer, very important. They've been cut back by 80 to 90%. You have army cutworm moths that feed on high mountain wildflowers, drink the nectar of them, and they're found just above or just below the end of alpine. And so they go up high, and these Miller moths, army cutworm moths, they migrate hundreds of miles from farm country where they're treated as pests and have lots of pesticides that are dumped on them. And then in addition, you've got climate change, and we know what's happening as ecotypes are moving up mountain slopes, and it might be imperiling the food source for army cutworm moths. And then, of course, there's meat. This is a photograph of 610 sister, one of the original triplets, 615. And 615 here is eating on a bison carcass. A few weeks later, she was out on the Bridger-Teton National Forest adjacent to Grand Teton National Park, and she stumbled upon a moose, and a deer hunter was coming walking out, and he passed her and turned around, and she stood up to inspect him, and he put five shots into her chest and killed 615. 615 here looked as healthy, if not healthier, than 610, so you think about that lost reproduction. This is a bear named Ash. Ash and Brownie were twins. And Brownie was killed when someone was looking for bears along the roadside, wasn't paying attention, and drove his car 45 yards off the sagebrush right into Brownie and killed Brownie, and Ash disappeared. This is another single cub. This belonged to 610. That cub disappeared. So, you think about this family tree, an impressive lineage, remarkably productive matriarch. Of the 18 bears there that are attributed to her, half of them have died in various kinds of encounters with people. Some have been hit by cars. Some have been removed for conflict with livestock. One bear, 760, was moved because he was getting near a subdivision. So all kinds of things beset grizzly bears. And then, of course, they live along the road. So remember Mama and the cub that were swimming the river? 399 was the Mama. And this one was nicknamed Snowy because when his face and his fur is dry, one of the wildlife photographers nicknamed him Snowy. And so this time last year, Snowy was getting big and fat for being a cub of the year and attracted international attention again. And so Mama was teaching Snowy the ropes of how to get along. Was teaching Snowy how to stalk elk. And then we got to the eve of the solstice. And Snowy was killed by a hit-and-run driver along the road in Grand Teton National Park. The driver never stopped. And the big question then loomed, was this the end of the line for 399's lineage? Was this it? As Snowy lay dying, 399 went out into the middle of the road and started bawling. And nobody knew what to do, and 399 grabbed Snowy and dragged him to the side of the road and tended to him. And the only way that Rangers, they knew they needed to get her off the road, so they had to haze her away and then brought him in for a necropsy. But 399 was seen frantic, behaving as any mother would who had just lost an offspring. And again, nobody knew what would happen to her. She was then a 21-year-old mama, the oldest known Greater Yellowstone grizzly known to have cubs was a 27-year-old. So, what happens? So, this is 399. This is a photo from a few years ago. This is 399 at about 425 pounds. This is a fellow named Brutus. So you can imagine how big Brutus is. So Brutus and another male named nicknamed Bruno were seen in the company of 399 last summer, sporadically. Brutus is believed to be the father of some of those sets of triplets, though a sow will breed with a bunch of different males. This is 399 last fall, one of the last shots. What does she look like to you? Maybe old and really fat. And Sue Cederholm, who took this photo, Tom and I were back east talking about bears. You know, as Tom said, he didn't know if she had just become kind of a floozy and let herself go. But luckily the story doesn't end. So this spring, on May 16th, 399 comes out of the den in the afternoon, late afternoon. I happened to be down there for an event, and so I went out there with Tom. This is the spot right here where 399 dragged Snowy off the road last year. And so 399 shows up. Nobody knew what had happened to her. And by the way, I should back up and say something else. Prior to last spring, 2016, I've been writing a column for a long time. And I wrote a column in the Jackson Hole News titled, "What Would Jesus Do?" And it talked about the Pope's encyclical. And I talked about the Pope as a conservationist. And one of the bear haters in Jackson Hole wrote in and said that I needed to interview him because he went up and found 399 and killed her and enjoyed watching her die. And so nobody really knew. Bears face a lot of hostility in the state of Wyoming. And so 399 came out with Snowy. Snowy dies. She goes into the den. And by the way, her den is in an area that has a lot of elk hunters. And so this is footage of her. And so Mengelson doesn't have any photos because she's been really elusive. What she did is she took her two cubs. She's got new twins this year. So again, a total of 18 animals. She has been swimming out to an island out in Jackson Lake to get away from people this year. So what do Greater Yellowstone grizzlies have to do with us and if we care about wild country? Was back at a conference two autumns ago and interviewed the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service director. These are all Mengelson photographs. And he said by the middle of this century, there's a high probability that major carnivore, wild carnivore populations worldwide will no longer exist in the wild. There's a high probability that rhinos will be gone and most of the major elephant populations and mountain gorillas. My question is this acceptable? And what I would assert is that grizzlies are our charismatic version of all of those animals, and we take them so often for granted. You know, when I talk to people about Greater Yellowstone and even denizens, there is not another Greater Yellowstone with the total diversity. The crown of the continent does not have the total diversity that we have. We have it all here in this great island that's right outside our back door. And so this thing that we have called grizzly bears, about 1,000 bears left south of Alaska, brings people from around the world. We go to the Serengeti, but guess what? The world is coming to our Serengeti. Nature tourism in Greater Yellowstone, it's worth $1 billion a year. It's the most reliable pillar. It's not greater than agriculture in Wyoming, but it's the most reliable pillar. $1 billion just for keeping it alive. 94% of people in Yellowstone National Park said they go to see bears. More people go to see bears in Yellowstone National Park than they do to go see Old Faithful erupt. So here we are in Greater Yellowstone. Delisting is soon going to be announced again. A couple 100,000 comments from citizens across the country, the vast majority in opposition to delisting, and an even greater majority of those opposed to sport hunting. So here's the take home. This is our valley. In every wild drainage around us where there are grizzly bears, there is a version of 399 out there. 399, as Mangelson and I say, is not this exceptional thing. She alone is not exceptional. She's part of this bear population that is exceptional. And we have mothers out there, and guess what? We're coexisting with them. The real question for us is, are we going to consciously choose to make space for them? Are we going to tolerate them just as they tolerate us? One of the questions is, why did the black bear come into town? Anybody know the answer to that? Every fall, or some falls when black bears come into town, why do they do that? They come in because their food source is typically berries. So why do we deny that when a whitebark pine population collapses, why would we deny that grizzly bears might be dispersing ever wider because they're searching for food? So really, the choice is, what do we want to do and what are we willing to commit ourselves to do to keep this animal population with it? It is a miracle. We've gone from 136 bears to 700-something. There's a lot of unoccupied public land in Greater Yellowstone that doesn't have grizzly bears. There's a lot in Wyoming, and the preference now is given to cattle and sheep. We're resolving conflicts in favor of domestic livestock. And so one of the other questions is if you are grazing animals on public land, non-native species, should they be given preference to animals that are in a way going to be forever in peril? As Dave Halleck, the science chief of Yellowstone, has said, Yellowstone is suffering a death not only by 1,000 cuts, but by 10,000 scratches. And as Teresa said, we live in a population here where in 24 years, the Gallatin Valley is going to be the population of Salt Lake proper at a 3% growth rate. In 48 years, the Gallatin Valley at 3% growth rate, we're actually growing closer to 4%. Whether that can be sustained is another thing. In 48 years, we'll be the size of Minneapolis. Finally, in 3 weeks, I'm launching a new publication called mountainjournal.org. It's going to be public interest journalism aimed at the relationship between people and the environment in Greater Yellowstone and the way that that relates to how we approach the West.